Hello. Good morning. My name is Joe McBride. This worship team, oh my word, I was here listening to it the entire time. I wanted to be here, my wife and I, to listen. You guys rock. And every song you chose, well, I got to do one or two, but they're spot on for this morning. Randy, have you ever seen my message yet? Have you seen this story? It's like he has. The Lord is, this is why it's so special this morning, because I can feel, I know that he is working, because he's laid this out all this week for me. He's given me such peace and the security to come in front of all you to give this my story, my talk. But hopefully you'll understand. I've got a wonderful family to introduce you to, my wife, Angela, if you don't know her. Angela can stand up. Yeah, she can stand up. She is the most beloved and most wonderful thing and person in my life. And you're going to find out a little bit how important she is to me. I've got two kids. Noah, he's 19. He'll be 20 on Friday. Some of you who know, that stumps you, doesn't it? And Ella, she's here today. Ella, can you stand? This is my introduction to my family. She's 18. I've written this down, but I'm just kind of in awe. I'm just trying to get my... I'm going to sit down because my feet's going to hurt. So, Randy, thank you for allowing me to share. It takes a lot of courage and faith, I guess, in what the Lord has to give, and I appreciate that. We're all getting older, right? I haven't really realized that along the years up until about 5-10 years ago when I start to realize how old I am getting. I was born when my dad was 25. So when I'm start doing the math, whenever I hit the age 25, I start thinking about that. I'm like, wow, he's 50. I'm 50 now. So what has happened along the way between the 25 mark and forward, where I can start relating how old my dad was at that time? So like whenever 16 is a pretty important year for most. You get your license, right? Anymore, it seems like kids are waiting to get their license. It's kind of a weird thing. But back then, license was the big thing. Let me get my notes here. So my dad was 41. Okay. When I turned 40, 41, I started thinking, man, I was 16. It makes me feel like, wow, what happened to the time? So the graduation time comes, high school. Dad was 43. When we got married back in 96, I was 23. Dad was 48. So we're getting real close to, I'm 50 now. And so Noah was born at 30. My dad was 55. So I'm just, this processing thing is hard for me to catch up. So doing this now at Elston Family Church, and I told Randy this, I was comfortable with, those being in charge, being leaders, just doing that forever. We know that's not true. And so Pastor Randy has asked some of us, you guys need to start cleaning up your act and stepping up, because this church needs you as leaders. And so this is part of the reason why I'm up here. So thank you for that, Randy. My point is this. For me, it's been comfortable thinking about, how things are run here. So I've already told you that. What I like to share today is two parts. The first part's going to be the front nine, and the second part's going to be the back nine. Now, some of you know what that means, right? So the front nine, I'm going to do a quick run through of some of my background experiences, kind of my journey, some of the things that really helped mold me, give me those ideas and those concepts and ultimately beliefs, and then the back nine, how my faith in Jesus has changed me, and specifically about forgiveness. So the front nine. For those who don't know, front nine is a golfing term, the first nine holes, right? Some of you may think of golf as being something recreational, that you enjoy playing. Some hate it. Some continue to play it, like it, and hate it. It's a love-hate relationship, that game. You watch it on, just like anything, you practice and practice and practice. Anybody that could demonstrate that skill or playing a sport, it looks easy. Like, I could do that. Golf is one of those games. It's just not that easy. So I grew up in a small town, southern Indiana. My parents, still together, 58 years of marriage. They still live in that same small town. They still live in that same house that I always remember growing up in. They moved there in 1975. They're wonderful people. Those who knew them long ago and even today genuinely love them. They think they're a loving couple to be around. I have a sister that's 7 years older than me, and she lives in Evansville. So my family did not go to church. I had grandparents that did. They went to a small country church. They had the picture of Jesus up on their wall in their house. But I didn't know. I knew God existed. Mom and Dad knew God existed. They talked about God. I knew Jesus existed, but I didn't know who he was. I didn't know what significance he had in the world or in history. With a modest upbringing, I truly did love my childhood. It was different times, but I loved my childhood. We lived in a small neighborhood. Kids were everywhere. And where were we? Outside all the time. Finding something to do. Throwing rocks at each other. Building ramps on the bikes. It didn't matter. We were always outside playing. In fact, if you can remember this, I was called Joey when I was a kid. And then I became Joe when I went to junior high school. I don't know why the school did that. They just printed my name Joe. It's supposed to be Joey, but they printed it Joe. That's how I got, I guess I'm growing up now. But yeah, I mean, we're always a story about growing up. We even decided during the summer we were bored. And down toward the golf course, about three or four houses down from mine, was the Walls family. And they had a daughter that was same age as I was. And we became close. We were really good friends and stuff. But her yard became the gathering place of everybody in the neighborhood, which was right beside this little nine-hole golf course. Bored one day, we decided to dig a hole in the yard, their yard, without asking. We all got shovels. We started to dig. We dug all day. If you can imagine this tape that's up here, it was bigger than that, and it was deep enough that you could fit about eight people in. And that was fun. And then we figured out, well, what else can we do with this hole? So we decided to build ramps and jump over it with people in it. So just stuff like that was fun all the time. Oh, also, with the friend that I told you that lived there, I put her in ER twice. Once was with a golf club to the head. Not on purpose. We were plowing down weeds in a field, and she was behind me, and I felt a thud and gassed her in the forehead. And the other time was with metal pie plate throwing as a frisbee. And I threw it while she was bent down and she raised up and it right on the cheekbone. So those are fun times. But one of the biggest impacts that I'd like to share with you that I had growing up was the game of golf. Like I said, we lived right next to that road, practically, about a football field away. Just a little nine-hole course. There were two brothers that owned it, Vic and Marvin Gilliatt. And up until I was about in third grade, fourth grade, I would just hang out down by the road. The golfers would, this is when they had golf carts with the two wheels on the back and one in the front, and you used to steer it like this. Do you remember those? And there were the old ladies that always played on Tuesdays, and they loved to give us kids ride to the next hole and stuff like that. So I was always just comfortable about hanging out by the course until I started to like, I wonder what it's like to putt a golf ball on the green. And so I think it was a golfer the one time where I found the club and I played around with that and I was like, this is kind of fun. So I began to tell my parents about this. They've never played, even though they live close to this course. And so my mom, with her best idea, she thought, I'll get him a golf club. So we went 10 miles away from my little small town in southern Indiana. The home of Larry Bird, in fact, French Lick. And there was a putt-putt golf course there, a little miniature golf course. And that was when they were all the orange rails and they were white and orange themed. Remember those? That was the only place she knew that had golf clubs. So she went there and she negotiated a price for and bought a putter from Putt-Putt.
That's funny.
And that's when they were actually real putters. They weren't rubber and plastic. So that was my first club. After that, I was getting clubs from garage sales. Then I actually got a true little starter set. It was a Wilson Andy Bean set. And then I got another full set. But this was a progression for me, and I became heavily involved in playing this game. Some little kid, like I said, this is fourth, fifth grade, playing golf out here, mainly around the holes that were close to the road. I didn't even know you had to pay to get on. I had no idea. I just went over and started smacking the ball around. The owner would come up every once in a while, Vic, and he would talk to me. He would never tell me to get off the course, so I stayed out of people's way, but he let me play. There was something about that game that allowed me to reflect, because I walked all the time, and carrying those clubs and walking to the next shot gives you a lot of time to think. And as a kid, that's what I did. Things that I was either not confident about or scared about, that game gave me that confidence. And I worked at it. I worked at it till the sun came up, till the sun went down. Do you remember the Crumbs who used to attend here? Jody Crumb is a fabulous artist. Fabulous. And when she started to paint, I asked her, I said, can you paint me a picture of a hole that is in the morning? It's got dew on the ground, because that was one of my favorite times to go out, was when the greens had dew on it. And when you putt, you just saw the first mark, because the ball would leave a trail. And I love that. So she painted me a canvas picture of that at home. So I think I was her first paying customer, too. I just kept playing and playing and playing until, you know, I got better. I was on the school golf team. I could not wait till I was on that team. That was in seventh grade. And I played all the way through high school. Back then, it wasn't as popular as it is today. Back then, parents, nobody came on the course to watch you play tournaments. It was very much a secluded kind of sport. But still, I played a lot of it solo. So this was a lot of that soloness, a lot of that I can do this, self-sufficiency, I gained first from that game of golf. All right, so still in the front nine, bear with me. Another impact is motorcycling. I loved motorcycles. My dad had one when I was little. He would take me out on the weekend. He worked, he drove a bread truck, and so he was off on Wednesdays and Sundays. And he would take me out, and I would ride on the back, of course, and we would end up at some creek somewhere. And he would let me go down and wade in the creek and throw rocks and all kinds of fun stuff. And I remember one time, it was after we did that, we got back on the bike and we're driving down the road. And I looked down, there was a big leech on my leg. And I started screaming and whatnot. And I can only imagine what Dad thought of me back there doing that. But those memories, I have a lot of those when my dad had that motorcycle. My neighbor had a motorcycle, so I was around this. And I kept begging for a motorcycle. The first one that Mom and Dad got me was a mini bike that had a Briggs & Stratton pool engine on it. And the back brake consisted of a pedal that you push down and a metal plate rubbed against the back tire. I rode that everywhere. I rode it during the winter. I rode it till the wheels were bald on this thing. I rode from the cops. Once. I'll never forget, I was coming off a road I wasn't supposed to be on, and there was one of the officers pulled down the street as soon as I went in, and he saw me, and I just went as fast as I could home, and I hit the gravel driveway, got some air, flied around the backyard, parked it, went inside and sat down. I was breathing real heavy, and by that time he pulled up in the driveway, and my mom was like, huh, I wonder what he's for. I'm like, It wasn't long after that I was wanting something where you could shift gears, because I couldn't shift a gear with just a throttle. And so one Saturday we went up and looked at some motorcycles up in Bloomington area, which was like 50 miles away. And we found this one. I was in love with it. And of course, Mom and Dad were like, yeah, we can't afford that. I'm like, yeah, it's cool, though. And when Dad was off one Wednesday, I got up and he's like, hey, Joey, how would you like to go get that bike? I was like, what? He goes, how would you like to get that bike? Man, I cannot forget that excitement that I had. I was hooked. I've had a lot of street bikes since then. And what I like to do with these bikes, a lot of people think this is a dangerous hobby, but this wonderful wife of mine knows how much I have joy in motorcycling. She puts up with me. I like to do long distance touring riding. That's a whole new ball game than just putzing around on the weekend. I like going and I like riding in the saddle for a long time. In fact, some of you may know, but I'm part of what's called the Iron Butt Association. And that simply means that you are a long-distance endurance rider. You've proved it. Last year, about this time, I think it was September 1st, actually, when I completed it, I completed touring and hit all 48 states in 10 days. So that was just shy of 9,000 miles I did in 10 days. Again, solo. Nobody was with me. I planned it all out, took months, and I completed it. Again, solo, self-sufficiency. So I've had a lot of this in my background. All right. So here's where we get to the back nine. So Angela and I met at Indiana State in 1994. Our first date was Valentine's Day in 95. Our wedding was March 16th, 1996. So we met. I knew that she was the one. I never thought I would have a one, but I knew that she was the one. And for some odd reason, I was her one. But she didn't know exactly what she was getting herself into. I mean, she saw the outside. She saw the Joe that is funny and things like that. But she didn't know some of the things that I had in my life. I was still a sinner without redemption. What she got was a man making it up based on his own ideas and concepts, convictions and beliefs, and a way of life that I learned on my own. I was ugly and selfish. My continued sarcastic remarks, these one-liner comebacks, distant. She thought something was wrong with her. What do you mean you can't have a marriage and run it solo? You can't do that. So not long after we were married, Angela brought up the idea of attending a church on a Sunday morning. She was a believer. So the first one that we attempted, now I'm going to come out of it because this is kind of funny. The first one that we attempted, we got mixed up on the location and we arrived late. We were also at the wrong church. That scared me. Like I said, I really didn't attend church. So I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I just know I was going with her. So not sure what church it was, but they were speaking in tongues. Altar calls with people passing out on the floor and others laying blankets across them. I was somewhat terrified. I looked at her. She looks at me. And I go, what do we do? She goes, well, I guess we go up there. I'm like, oh, no. We were standing right now. I'm like, please don't make me pass out. Please don't make me pass out. So not long after we ended up at a larger church where we started to attend regularly, and I learned about getting saved. I was baptized by one of the pastors in a private setting with Angela there being with me, and we celebrated and were happy now that we were yoked up. There were sinful things that were still part of me and had not changed this area of my life. So let's fast forward. after Noah and Ella were born. So we've been married 7 to 9 years when they were both born. As most of you know, Ella was born with a significant, severe, and near fatal health condition, unbeknownst to us. So on July 31st, 2006, we began the hardest life event of both of our lives. She was in heart failure with extremely high blood pressure. She spent 3 weeks in the hospital until the defect was found. Corrective surgery came up that October, and I still had plenty of my own beliefs based on my own ideas and concepts, and it was a stressful time for my family. It was also at that time when we got home from Ella's extended hospital stay after surgery. There were people from this church, at the time Elston Baptist Church, that were bringing meals over to us. And I just thought that was the oddest thing, that they were bringing us meals that we didn't, from people we didn't know. So this happened because of somebody attending here who knew our neighbor, who knew our situation. That's how it all ties in. The following October, I think I'm getting these sequences right. The following October, Angela was invited to one of the women's retreat that Elston was putting on. Then afterwards, she strongly suggested we attend a Sunday service the next day. And I was like, okay. So during worship and behind the keyboard, Randy was making repeated eye contact with me as if he was speaking right to me. Did he know me? I was like kind of wigged out by it. Interesting. Not long after, has anybody had that effect? Does Randy do that to you too? Yeah. So not long after that, we went to a church there, Oliverio's. I remember this. We were coming back from visiting my parents, which is 2.5 hours south. And we're coming back home. We were far from being in Lafayette. And Angela brings up, hey, do you want to go to that dinner that they're having at Elston? And I'm like, I was reluctant. I'm like, I don't know. It's Sunday. We're getting back home. I'm tired. Work the next day. That's how I do. And we decided to go. And we met some great folks there. And that's what started our 16 years here at Elston. So just around the corner, the ugly sin came up again, and this time it stung. It stung hard. We weren't talking to each other about it, but maintaining awkward silence and avoidance. We laid there in bed that night until I heard Angel's voice sternly ask, aren't you going to talk about this? Even though I knowingly walked right into this one, I hate conflict. I don't like it. I will flee from it every chance I get. I don't like it. There were a lot of hurt emotions that night. I had finally hit rock bottom with all the shame and deception and the darkness of it. I shared things with Angela for the first time that nobody knew. I was broken and I was repenting for all of it. In tears and with hopelessness, I asked God to forgive me. Now, what I'm about to say may seem simple, but the Lord spoke to her that night. She says in a loving voice, he already has. So to this day, that was the most powerful word spoken to me. I no longer had the strength to fight it. I truly believe that though Angela being there and loving me in that special way, in my desperate time of need and brokenness, that Jesus was reaching out his hand for mine and saying, it's okay, Joe. I have already forgiven you, so let me take it. You can't carry this, but I can. So I was going through scripture to really solidify what the Lord was doing with me. And in Matthew 11:28-30, come to me, all who labor and heavy burden or heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. 2 Corinthians 12:9, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Boy, did I have weakness.
and I thought I could handle it. I had weakness so much. Therefore, I will boast all more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. Jesus crucified on the cross for the sins of the world, for me and all the sin that I committed and commit. He who had no sin stood in the gap for all mankind and my wretched self. When he said, "It is finished," paid in full, he meant it. How often are we afraid to accept something without giving something in return? We feel like we have to work for it. We have to earn it. As simply as somebody buying you lunch, you feel obligated to do something. I'll pay next time. That's not what he wants at all. He wants you to fully recognize his love in that gift and the fact that he's already done it. And that's when I got that message. There was a man that I told Ella's story 2 years ago and how he brought her to health because he could have took her. She was young enough. She was just 13 months old. He could have took her. And we wrestled with this. I was like, why even pray? Is it going to change God's will? So she's still here because of him. And so I was telling him this story, and he looks at me, he's shaking his head, he goes, "Now that's a love story. This is what Christ did on the cross is a love story." Ephesians 2:8-9, "For it's by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not from yourselves, it is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast." It also reminds me, I've always been likened to the suffering that Job went through. And so I went back through it again to refresh all the things and the order of things that Job did go through. And I realized something. And man, it hit me because I'm like, this is why I felt so good, because he was laying this path. And you talked about suffering. You talked about this morning. I'm like, this is exactly right. So if you can imagine Job having the success that he did, he had the family, he was very important in that time, wealthy. He lost it all. He lost all the possession things, one after the other. Messenger came, "You lost this and this and all your servants." Oh, another messenger came while he was telling the story, "You lost this and this and this," right? He kept telling, there's messengers coming and telling him all this. "Oh, by the way, wind came, blew your house down, and all your family, your kids were in there, they're dead." Why didn't his wife die? And this is what really got me. In my experience, my wife is my greatest support. She always has been. For some, it may not be like this, but for my marriage, for my family, my wife is my greatest support. I have no doubt that what she does is in my best interest. I have no doubt. In fact, coming over here this morning, there was something. We were coming out of the driveway and going down the street. What was it that I said, the windows. We went to a birthday party yesterday, and when it's hot, I just leave the windows cracked. She hates that. She likes them rolled up so no bugs get in there. I'm like, I don't like the car to be hot. And I even had the sunroof back. She goes, "You better close that." I'm like, okay. I didn't balk. I'm like, okay, fine. So I came home with her folks. She came home afterwards, and she's like, "You had all the windows down." I go, "I had them cracked." She goes, "Not yours. It was all the way down." I'm like, yeah, maybe. So I was like this in my ear. She was over here, and I was like, man, that was kind of loud. So she just, you know, I just said, I just, like this, she knew what I was referring to. And she goes, "I'm not going to say it, but I'm going to say if some men had wives that seem like to give them a hard time. They may think in their minds about their wife that's not good. I don't ever think that. I've never thought as my wife as something bad. Or because of what she said to me, I've never thought of she's a whatever. I've never thought that. I've never said that. And it made me think, I'm like, that's kind of a rare thing. We just have this relationship. So back to Job's wife. After all this has happened, then it came time for, well, he still has his health. So Satan's going to up it a little bit. God gave him permission. But don't kill him. Let's take his health away. Let's see what you do. He got the boils all over head and toe. And while he's sitting there thinking about all what just happened to his possessions, including his kids, and now he's got these painful boils all over him. He's picking with a piece of pottery. His wife comes up and basically says, why don't you just give up? Why don't you just give up? Job, a man of integrity who loved God so much. And she says that to him. Can you imagine how hurtful that would be? That's all you have left. Wouldn't that be like the ultimate kind of like knife in your gut? So through all that, Job didn't blame God. Because all those things I just read in some of those verses, you know, his grace is sufficient. What he has done, if I clearly see that now, not as clear as I want to, but I see that more clear every single day. Not because of what I have, not because of possessions, but because of my, I'm constantly thinking about, Lord, change my mind, transform me. And there's lots of things that I used to do that I don't do anymore. There's things that I slip up on. Not saying I don't slip up, but I don't live that stuff anymore. That's the change. Again, my weakness is his strength. So, Randy, I am done. Thank you for letting me share. If you have anything any questions you have about what I just said, my wife is my interpreter. She knows what I probably meant by what I said. All right. Thank you very much, church. Have a great day.
Why don't you guys come back on? Come on back up. I have to tell you that I do not purposely stare at you. I don't. You know? If it happens, it's the Spirit of God doing it, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, let's stand and let's close out with a song here. Thank you, Joe. What a great testimony. Good words, good encouragement, some conviction by the Spirit of God. And I think what I'd like to do is have these guys start, and I just want to be available right now for you. Maybe you'd like to come to the altar. We're not going to knock you out and lay blankets on you this morning, but you never know what the Lord might want to do with you. And this is about you making room, okay? And what we have to be careful about is experiences that some of us have had through the years of how God works. And, you know, if we start boxing in God on what he can and can't do, what he wants to do and doesn't want to do, then we've just taken over the throneship. And so true letting go and letting him be on the throne means that he's got room to do what he wants to do. So we'll just be just a minute. We won't be long. I just want to be available. Maybe you just need to come to the altar. Maybe you just need to come and lay it down. Maybe you need to come, and maybe there's an opportunity for me to pray for you or others to pray for you. I don't want to give you that time, because we've done what we feel like the Lord asked us to do, to create a table for you to eat from. We'll see how long you go. We'll see what you need to do. is good. Amen. Listen, I'm convinced that there were more decisions that are either being wrestled with right now or that were maybe possibly made within your heart. I just encourage you to go public with that at some point. Tell somebody, okay? Write it down on a card, turn it in, make it public, because that's when it begins to stick, okay? Just keep it to yourself, keep it to yourself. The enemy comes in, steals it away. Remember the thief, the klepto? Yeah, remember that guy? Yeah, yep. The klepto sneaks in, steals the truth, the base of beliefs. Some of you are really wrestling with that right now, and I get it. I've lived a life of that. I get it. Joe, thank you. Thank you for being obedient. Thank you for just showing a level of openness and transparency and in all of your ways. You have our best interest at heart. And even with a man like Job and with his story, and some of us maybe can relate to that, you had a purpose in that. You were going to show your greatness and your glory even through all of that that Job walked through. So, though I walk through the valley of shadow of death, I will fear no evil. I know that you're with me even through the worst of times in my life. So I pray for people this morning, maybe those even online that were wrestling with a decision or that made some decisions. I pray, God, that there's a contact, a person that they will come to, send a note, write a card, do an email, text, whatever, and walk through some process of healing in those areas. Because you are our healer, and we thank you for it. I pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Shake up the ground here. Let's go as we close out.